This is the Ben and Ashley I, Almost Famous Podcast with iHeartRadio.
We're back with another week of the Almost Famous Podcast. I'm Ben.
I'm Ashley.
Everybody out there listening, I think it's only best that we take the top end of this podcast for another week and just sit and say, what a few months it's been. I was just getting prepped for this tonight, Ashley, and I'm sitting here going, wow, since quarantine, let's start at quarantine started.
Okay.
We went from a time of Tiger King and TikTok videos.
I know.
Into what else became really popular? I just remember a ton of Tiger King talk for a long time. A lot of reruns. I watched the 1998 Masters at one point and had a great time doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've moved into a season of what feels like just a lot of learning and a lot of listening, at least for you and I. And I know a lot of people out there are saying, hey, we've been doing this forever. We've been advocating on behalf of Black Lives for a long time. We've been advocating for our friends whose voices get shut down in the masses for a long time. And Ashley, you and I have done that in part, right? Like, I spend a ton of my life in Central America. I run a company, Generous, that our only mission is to fight the injustice facing humans in this world. Yet, right. The parts that has embarrassed me most about myself is, and admittedly, is even amidst that being the mission, like, I've never stopped to focus on my neighbors next to me and my friends who are Black saying, listen up, listen to me, I'm hurting. And that's right. Why these last few weeks have been a lot of learning for me personally.
I agree. It's like I said last week, just completely opened my eyes, and I just feel so stupid sometimes for not seeing what was definitely around me.
This week is a podcast where we will be talking about this topic. We will be talking about Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. We will be interviewing people, especially within Bachelor Nation, who has really spoken up on the topics. And some opinions have been agreed upon by us and some have not, but we want to hear from them. This is what this podcast has always been. It's been a podcast to update people on what's going on in Bachelor Nation, and we won't stop this week. Because, once again, I'm like a broken record. Every time I say it, I don't know how it happens. We haven't had new Bachelor content in a long time, yet Bachelor Nation has not stopped filling the news waves. Starting with a petition that's came out this week, it's hashtag BIPOC Bachelor. The tagline is, it's time. We've seen multiple Bachelor franchise contestants participating in this petition. And it says 40 season, 18 years, one Black lead. Rachel Lindsay has gone as far to say that she will exit the franchise if diversity issues aren't addressed. And that's what this petition's saying is, hey, we need more diversity in The Bachelor. I just think it's obvious. Like, the numbers point to it. You've had 30 total seasons.
Yep.
One Black 40 lead.
40 seasons.
40 total seasons, whatever it is. One Black lead. I don't think anybody's going to argue that The Bachelor couldn't do better. I will say that since I've been on the show, it has been something that I've heard producers talk about more and more and working on. I don't know the casting side of things. I don't know how that works. I don't know the ins and outs of that. I'm very far removed from that. But I do know that it is something that the Bachelor franchise really is trying to focus on. Mm-hmm. But they could definitely do better.
Right. Rachel says it's embarrassing, honestly, to be affiliated with the franchise at this point. I think that there have been an increasing number of people of color in the cast, but she's right about the lead. I mean, that is a crazy statistic. 40 seasons, one lead. If you guys do want to sign this petition, you can go to change.org, and it's a long URL I'm not going to read out for you guys, but if you go to change.org and then you search a campaign for anti-racism in the Bachelor franchise, you'll be able to sign it. So far, 15,298 people have signed it. They're trying to get to 25,000.
Yeah, you know, and the number will just keep increasing. I think it's in everybody's best interest. Personally, I'm in favor of this. There's And even talking to the people who created the campaign, there's no, like, this is not to try to end the franchise. This petition was started to bring light to the topics that the fans are kind of screaming at The Bachelor to say, we want to see people from different backgrounds who are different colors, who have different stories on this show. We're screaming at you now to say, do it. And so that's where this petition started from. But it's all fans of the show that are signing it and people who will continue to watch the show. So we started with that and Rachel Lindsay saying she'll exit. We also then move into Catherine, who is Sean's wife, thought she was on The Bachelor. She admitted to check a box as a Filipino woman. She admits this, and this is released in Us magazine. Ashley, tell us about it.
So Catherine said, as Ben just said, when I was originally cast, I was very flattered but somewhat grounded by the fact that I would be one of the faces that represented people of color. I knew that one of the reasons I was probably, that was one of the reasons I was probably chosen, was because I was Filipino. I counted myself out to be his fiance because of what I assumed Sean liked. I thought that I was just there to check a box, but the season ended with so much more. She also said, I became present with the process, and as he started noticing me for who I really was, I was allowed this experience to open myself up to the possibility of fully being loved and appreciated for all that I was, and I ended up getting to represent a mixed race community.
This week has a lot of people have been called out. There's been confrontation. There has been riots and protests, and then social media is also another platform that people are using to advocate on behalf of others or advocate their own views. And this week, Garrett Yagroyan, as mentioned before, had posted on his Instagram a black box with a blue line through it. And Becca Martinez and came out against Garrett, saying it was, in a sense, not the good timing and not okay. So that we don't speak for Becca, we're actually going to bring Becca on now to talk more about the Garrett situation and her thoughts and why she stood up in this with this environment to speak against Garrett publicly. As promised, one of our favorites, Becca Martinez, is here with us on the Almost Famous podcast. Hello, Becca.
Hello. How are you guys?
We are good. But, Becca, I have some questions for you real quick before we jump into some of the topics that we brought you in
for.
Sure, sure. You're really close to your due date to have a baby.
As we're recording right now, I'm 10 days away.
From
the due date. Could be tonight. Who knows?
Yeah.
I have like a, I feel like I have like a high school, middle school education on how babies are delivered. I don't know if I have like a wide grasp of what's about to happen. I do know that it's incredibly impressive, whatever you're about to do. My question really is, as you get this close, what's the emotion? Like, I would be scared like to death about the idea of pushing a human being out of any hole in my body.
Yeah, that's so fair. That is so fair. Honestly, okay, so the first time around, you know, I didn't know what I was getting myself into, and I'm someone who really likes a challenge. I mean, I did kind of know. I was doing so much research, watching so many videos of other people doing it, reading so many stories, listening to podcasts, all that. So I was excited because I like a challenge, and I was, you know, my mindset has always sort of been like, hey, you know, why do people do marathons? It's because it's fun to challenge and push yourself like to your physical limits, right? So that's kind of the way that I've always looked at it. And that can answer some people's questions of like, why do an unmedicated birth? And so I was stoked because I was like, who knows what this is going to be like for me? It's different for every person. How am I going to handle it? How am I going to respond? And it was great experience overall. Pretty cool. Anyone can go watch my birth story on YouTube or my Instagram, or go listen to my podcast, Chatty Broads, about it. But this time around, I do know what's coming. So I have to say that this time I'm a little more nervous because I'm like, ooh, like I know this isn't a walk in the park. I personally think that a lot of your mindset and mental game can change a lot of how you experience things. And like, I didn't think that the whole experience was excruciating. However, it's hard fucking work. Like, no matter what your experience is like, whether it's excruciating or just like joyful and ecstatic, it's hard work. So I'm very aware of that going into it. And I'm kind of like, all right, here we go. But honestly, the thing that I get most nervous about, like, and I did the first time and this time, is the reality starts hitting that you are bringing a whole new human in the world that you have to take care of. And that shit, like, birth is, you know, maybe at most 48 hours. And then a child is forever. So that's the part that that I really feel some type of way about, is like, oh man, here we go. It's a new person in my life, and a new person that I have a responsibility to take care of and educate and all these different things.
So I guess I have one more question before we move on to other things. You're having another at-home birth. Did you do at-home last time?
I didn't.
First time was a birth center.
So it kind
birth
of,
center, okay.
Yeah, I always encourage people to look into birth centers, because it's a great in-between if you don't feel quite comfortable giving birth at home, but maybe don't feel super comfortable in a hospital environment. So the birth center was great. The benefit, I feel super confident going into this birth. The benefit is I don't have to drive anywhere or be in the car anywhere in labor. And in LA especially, that is a huge, huge benefit, because laboring in the car isn't fun. So yeah, we're gonna be at home here in Long Beach.
Does somebody come and help you?
Yeah, like a midwife. Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah, I personally don't advocate for unassisted births, but a midwife has basically the exact same qualifications, if not a little bit better suited towards a low risk, uncomplicated pregnancy as an OBGYN. And there are different types of midwives too. But so anyway, yes.
Okay. Why at home? Truly because of the traffic?
Like, you mean like versus a birth center or versus the hospital?
Yeah, versus a birth center like last time.
Well, we also moved too, and so it wouldn't be the same birth center and same midwife. This time, I mean, we have a home now, and so it's really comfortable. And for a lot of women, like, their labor can be a lot more comfortable and progress a lot faster if they're in an environment where they're comfortable with. I mean, I'm sure Jade knows all about that.
That's funny.
But yeah, so, I mean, we've got the whole setup. We've got the birth tub here, ready to go, all that kind of thing. So it'll be interesting.
Cool. Yeah. I'm so intrigued. Hey, thanks for sharing that.
Of course.
I could spend about another 4 hours asking you questions about being a mom, but
I'll come on and chat about it after I do this round, and we'll see how this one goes.
That's really great. Well, Becca, you have a lot going on in your life. Mm-hmm. As usual, I was prepping for the podcast, and I was like, okay, when it comes down to issues of social justice, civil justice, any type of justice that is sometimes blinded to me, and that's been something that I've had to share, is like, some of this I've been blinded to, and being in this world brings light to attentions that I have never even thought of. I was like, how do I confront Becca? Because I feel like if I've ever questioned, I'm going to lean on what she's saying, because I feel like she's going to be passionate about it and probably speaking truth somehow, some way. And that didn't stop you for advocating and speaking up on the current and hopefully not trendy issue of Black Lives Matter. Hopefully this is a long-lasting issue that I know you and I and Ashley really want this to be something that is advocated for the entirety of our lives. But you responded openly to Garrett's post. Why?
You know, that's a good question. And I've been reflecting on it on the past couple days. And look, here's what I'm going to say. Do I disagree with anything that I said, or did I think I said anything wrong? No. What I've really been reflecting on, though, I saw I don't know if it was a tweet from somebody or what it was. For listeners who don't know, tone policing is a term that's used when, you know, if a Black person is talking about, let's say, Black Lives Matter, and someone says like, hey, maybe if you said this nicer, more people would listen.
Yeah.
The idea behind tone policing is that Black people do not owe anybody they don't have the obligation or the responsibility to police their tone to make their message more palatable to white listeners. But somebody tweeted and said, On the other hand, though, it's a white person's responsibility to police their tone so that other white people will hear them. And I read that in the past day or so, and I was like, huh, I really need to reflect on that and reflect on how maybe sometimes I do need to censor myself in order to reach more people instead of, you know, shutting out the 15,000 people that decided to leave my platform after posting some of the stuff I posted on my page. And so, you know, obviously the simple answer is my reaction when I think something's f***ed up is I've got to say something about this. Like, how is no one else, how am I seeing no other Bachelor person say anything about this under this post? How is no one calling this person out?
Well, should we take the time to read the statement now?
Yeah.
Okay, so Garrett posted this on the same day as the blackout on Tuesday.
Last I think it was Tuesday? The day after.
The day after?
The day after.
Yeah.
Okay. So he said it was a black square with a blue line through it. And he said in the caption, I've been pretty torn up the past week about everything going on. I've listened, learned, helped, supported, and grown. With so many friends and family in law enforcement, I couldn't sit back and not support them. In the hundreds of thousands of women and men of all races that represent this thin blue line as well. It's important for me to recognize the ones who stand in the gap and put their lives on the line each and every single day for humans of different race and ethnicity, including those who hate them. The thin blue line represents each officer protecting protesters, properties, and businesses while being threatened, attacked, shot at, hit with vehicles and other forms of brutality. There have been over 300 injured, shot, and killed in just 1 week. They are suffering the consequences over an act that they didn't commit. They continue to put in overtime away from their families, stay silent while being threatened, hated, and assaulted. We can't judge an entire group of people by the actions of a few. We can't judge peaceful protesters by the actions of a few violent protesters. And we can't judge all cops by the actions of a few bad ones. Remember, when they put on the badge, they're still humans with raw emotion. And the more brutality they face, the more on edge they become. They make mistakes, they have compassion, and no matter how terrible they are treated or whatever negative is said about them, they still show up for us when we need them. Remember these men and women who hold this thin blue line. They're strangers, friends, family, neighbors, or your enemies. They will always be protecting us no matter what. Hashtag thin blue line, hashtag anti-racism, and hashtag anti-brutality.
I think there's a lot to go. I mean, there's a lot of subtext about this post too. That's like so beyond some of the simple, I mean, some of the things I can directly bring up is like, okay, let's look at the first two sentences, which are about like how he's listened, learned, helped, supported, and grown. So immediately he's centering himself in this post. And what bothered me so much about this is the silence on Black lives. The black square with the few emojis. It's almost better to not say that at all, in my opinion, because when you're doing that, I find it personally, especially if you're going on to write a full-on dissertation about the police, you are sort of trying to absolve yourself of this responsibility of like, yeah, I held space and I posted this black square and my work here is done. It's to me, it's more of like a PR move. I don't see how that's providing any actual solidarity. And like, I saw a tweet of someone saying like, how are you going to be silent for Blackout Tuesday? Or like, how are you going to say you're staying silent when you've always stayed silent? Mm-hmm. And so the issue, I gotta say this, like, I am not anti-law enforcement. I understand how scary, I'm sure, this past week has been for people who are first responders, for people who have family members or loved ones who are cops. Tensions are very high right now in this country, and I completely understand that fear, and I can totally empathize with how scary it must be right now. The issue that I have is that The reason that that is the case and why these tensions are high is because finally people are waking up to the police brutality that cops, even if they are the bad apples, are not, have not been held accountable for. And when you don't say anything about Black lives, and then especially on a huge platform like Garrett has, you're taking up space to speak about something. I don't know if I'm saying this right, but it's almost like the subtext is yes, but, and I don't know, that just, I find that to be a really big issue, because, and some of the other things he's just saying in his post, like, you know, it's not about, like, not all cops basically is what he was saying. And you know, they have issues too. And it's like, it's not just about the one or two openly racist cops. Like, the issue is this system where over and over again, police officers are not being held accountable by our justice systems for the crimes that they're perpetrating because of a flawed system. Like, this goes so beyond the whole few, it's just a few bad apples argument. And I'm sure people have seen, you know, there was that video that went viral of those two cops pushing this old white man to the ground and how those two officers got suspended. And then all 57 of the people, like, of the other police officers that they worked with, suspended themselves in protest of the two cops' suspension. And it's like, there are issues here that go so beyond just one Black man being murdered. And I'm sure people have been seeing all the other names and all these other instances where police officers haven't been accountable. It's not about hating cops, but when you take this time to basically express, like, Blue Lives Matter, which was the subtext of his post, you're comparing someone's experience in their chosen career to someone's experience of being Black. And while I'm not saying that they don't deserve to be safe or they don't deserve to be respected because it's a chosen career, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying don't compare it to the experience of someone's color that they don't get to choose.
Do you think that he's insinuating that he's not saying it blatantly, though, in the caption?
Yeah, 100. Yeah, no. Nowhere did he explicitly say Blue Lives Matter, but that's what I'm saying. The subtext of this is, and yes, but cops, when nothing was said in the first place about Black lives. And what really bothered me is a lot of people are saying, like, what if you have a brother? What if you have a husband, et cetera, who's a police officer? And what I want to say is, for one, that issue of, like, you have to imagine someone in proximity to you in order to value their life, I already kind of take issue with that. What if you had a brother or a father or a husband who was Black who experienced police brutality? Like, wouldn't you be upset about people detracting from this moment when we're trying to bring awareness to the oppression that Black people face in our country by making it about this group of people doing the oppression? No, not all of them are oppressing. I'm not saying that. But, you know, think critically about what I just said.
Becca, I'm under the impression, I don't think, and I don't want to speak for Garrett, we got to get him on here, hopefully, or something, but, like, I don't think he wrote this with ill intent.
Yeah, intent doesn't really erase impact, though.
Exactly. Right. And so I'm saying this to say this, because I'm trying to prove a point. So, you've heard it, obviously, both sides now. I'm sure, and I want to hear from you in a second what the reaction has been to this. But if all we're saying is, hey, Black lives matter, like, that they matter. And I think most people, no matter what your religious, political background would be, would go, yes, Black lives matter. Hopefully. Like, I don't know what's below that. I don't know what else you would say. Like,
right.
I spoke with a friend of mine last night, and he's a black man. He said, well, the one thing we got to be careful of is when these situations of high tension come up, it's easy for us in this culture, in this world, to want to distract away from it as quickly as possible, mm-hmm. to try to be with good. And that's why I said with good intent, to be inclusive to the masses. But what you do is distract from the message.
Yes.
And we've done that over and over again. And so that's why I started with, I don't think it was bad intent. I do think it's distracting from the message. And my whole point to this is black men and women right now, like, and for hopefully, like we said, forever, the stage is yours. Like, it's always like, we need, like, this is not, we cannot distract from this. Like, this message needs to be talked, preached, and yelled. So yeah. Back to you is, what has the reaction been?
Well, I actually just wanted to piggyback off that and just add one more thing too. And I think that it's also important to know, I've seen a lot of people saying like, well, don't speak on this because you aren't black, or I don't have anything to say because I'm not black. Well, you know, Garrett isn't a cop, so, but he can still empathize with that experience, you know, like, you don't have to be something to be able to speak on it. People have been talking about the experiences of doctors and nurses during COVID, like, and nobody says, like, are you a doctor or a nurse? Can you speak to how hard their experience is? Like, well, that, if we start applying that logically to other areas, like, that's absurd, right? Like, you don't have to experience something directly to empathize or to speak out about it. So I just wanted to add that on.
Or come into solidarity with it. Like, to come to try our best, yeah, to support.
Yeah. You know, it's hard because, like I was saying in the beginning, then I went on my own page and posted some that I felt like my post itself, like, I made myself very clear what I was saying. And then I also included a very inflammatory photo, which now looking back on it, I'm like, did I have to? No, probably not. Like, do I like disagree with it? No, but did that maybe make people tune out when they needed to be tuning in? Yeah. And like,
that would go back to what you're talking about with tone policing.
Right. Maybe I need I know I need to work on policing my tone to reach more people. Mm-hmm. It takes judgment, right? And it takes learning, because there's a time to speak up and say, no, this is going to piss you off, but I'm going to fucking say it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people, someone was just telling me today, you know, like, Hannah Brown, she lost more followers with her response than she did when she said the N-word.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I was just going to bring that up. There is a website out there that tracks followers, how many you gain, how many you lose, your stats, all that stuff. In the 2 weeks that Hannah, you know, was silent after saying the N-word, she I don't know the number that she lost. But I do know that in the weekend of her apology, the long 20-minute one, she lost more followers after that apology, and I am appalled. I've been repeating this stat to, like, anybody who will listen over the past couple days, because it is so mind-boggling to me. But it says it all. Like, that's all. I don't even have – there's so much – it avoids over-explaining certain things, because, like, with that stat, it just says everything.
Yeah, same thing happened, I guess. I mean, that like example between those two of the loss of followers says so much. But even other people, like, I guess someone was just telling me today that Maddie Pruitt has been going to protests and like speaking out, and she also has lost a substantial amount of followers. So, you know, there's a time and place to be like, fuck it. And if you're going to tune out right now, like, that says a lot more about you than it says a lot about me. I don't think that was exactly the case with my post. But you know what I'm still seeing, though, is a lot of people who are missing the point. So then I went on my page and I posted my own post, and I was basically talking specifically about Blue Lives Matter, because I also knew that Garrett had, based on his Instagram likes and stuff, supported Blue Lives Matter before, and I'm 100% willing to bet, yes, this is an assumption, 100% willing to bet that he supports the Blue Lives Matter movement, which is in direct opposition, was created in direct opposition to the Black Lives Matter movement. But I was just basically posting about how, you know, you can't say blue lives because no one has a blue life. This is just the basic of my argument. No one has a blue life. being black isn't a uniform you get to remove at the end of the day. It's not something you get paid for. It's not something you can quit or retire from. It definitely isn't something that protects you from the justice system, all of which are true for police officers. Yes, their jobs are very hard. And I don't know how many times I can say, like, I am not anti-law mm-hmm. enforcement, and I 100% support the people in law enforcement, but just as much I support the accountability of people in law enforcement and making any move possible to eliminate and hold accountable police brutality. Anyway, so I mean, I just saw a lot of people missing the point and being like, well, I hope you never have to call the cops because this is what you think of them. And I'm like, actually, if you read through everything I wrote, never once did I say I was in opposition to cops. And I also got a lot of messages and comments too from people who said my father or brother or grandfather, whoever, sister, is a law enforcement officer. And I 100% agree with this message, and they do as well. We do not support the Blue Lives Matter movement because for so many reasons. So it's like, I don't know. It's been disheartening to see people twist it into kind of into the message they want it to be so that they can hate it.
Can I make another assumption here? Saying Blue Lives Matter is kind of the same these days as saying All Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I mean, I'm sure people will disagree, but I think so. Because again, like Ben was saying, what is it doing? The purpose of it is to distract and detract, mm-hmm. whether or not that's the individual's intent from the Black Lives Matter movement, which is what we need to be focusing on right now and continuing to focus on.
Mm-hmm. I do want to make clear that we did ask Garrett to come on here. He couldn't today. We want to show both sides to this. And Becca Kufrin, of course, his fiance, said on Friday on Instagram, many conversations are being had between friends, family members, Garrett, and podcast crew alike. Because I'm silent on my Instagram right now doesn't mean that I'm silent in my life. Have you and Becca spoken?
So Becca actually reached out to me this morning and she asked if we could talk on the phone this week. And I said, like, yeah, 100%, absolutely. And I messaged her and I just said, I said, totally. And with that, I said, I just want to be clear. I said, I want to be fully transparent and let you know that I don't feel any kind of allegiance or obligation to coddle any of my friends, partners on or offline. But that being said, I see people's partners as separate entities and I don't associate their partners' views or attitudes with them necessarily. And so I just wanted to let her know that up front, and mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to chatting with her. But I just want, like, I mean, it's not really, I know Garrett posted in his whole story too, like, you're not invited over anymore and all that, but
that's what I was going to ask you next. So like, you're now not invited over for dinner.
I don't know. I mean, Becca's Garrett and Garrett's Garrett. I love Becca and I have a lot of respect for her. And I'm really, by the way, looking forward to her episode chatting with Rachel about this. And Garrett is Garrett. I don't particularly like Garrett. I'm not interested in having dinner with him. And I do hope that, I mean, it doesn't affect my relationship with Becca, just to be totally honest. I mean, and she knows this too. It's not like we've been super close the past year or so, not for any particular reason, but that's just kind of how that goes. But I do think there is a little bit of a misconception too in Bachelor, quote, Bachelor Nation, or like in the Bachelor family, that like, someone, if you were on both on The Bachelor, like, you are friends, or like, you should because people were like, oh, you should have messaged Garrett privately. And I'm like, well, I don't know Garrett, and he's posting this publicly, and I think it's fine to also respond to it publicly. And I don't know. I just see that it that kind of way in general. I think it's a little different when you're close friends with someone, but like in the case of Hannah Brown too, when someone has a very large public platform that they profit off of and spread messages from, I think it's totally fine for them also to be held accountable on those public platforms by other people in public positions. So anyway,
well, yeah. Becca, thanks for coming on this platform and talking with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry. I feel like a lot of that was kind of like disjointed and my head's kind of in a jumble. We were just talking about this on the podcast the past couple hours, and I'm sure I could have been a lot more clear and concise, but thank you so much for having me on.
Where else can people find you And what's your podcast called? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so podcast is Chatty Broads, and so Tuesday the 9th, we will be releasing an episode kind of talking about everything that's gone down in Bachelor Nation over the past week in the wake of George Floyd's murder. So Chatty Broads, and then of course Instagram too. There's always a lot going on there. Yeah. And the baby's coming soon.
Yeah. I want to wrap this up by saying that you made $1,000 donation to the National Police Accountability Project in Garrett's name. Can you talk a little bit more about this?
Yeah, I mean, so he called me, he screenshotted my comment on, apparently he blocked Nick, which he hasn't blocked me, so I'm insulted by that. Instead of blocking me, he screenshotted my comment and then wrote this thing on his story saying, like, remember when you told Becca you loved me and you were sorry for everything you said about me, like, turns out you never got to know me and you're not invited over, whatever. And then I responded back to him in our DMs, in our private DMs, and I just said, I didn't say that. I said, sorry for giving you so much because at the time I thought you cared and I don't think you do anymore. Anyway, he screenshotted that and then put that on his story too, which I'm like, I don't know why you did that, because you didn't really make you look any better, and you just, now I don't have to say anything because you did the work for me. But I was like, do I post about this? And I'm like, no, this is that, I mean, I can be pretty petty, but I was like, I don't think that's actually accomplishing anything. And that's another thing, like, Garrett had the time to talk about me on his stories, but didn't have a time to talk about Black Lives Matter on his stories. So that's all said on that. But I was like, okay, how can I be petty and productive at the same time? Oh, I'll just do a donation to the Police Accountability Fund in his name. And I did it. And you could see it in really small letters, but I think a lot of people still caught on. And I had fun with it. And was it petty? Yes, 100%. But I also got a lot of screenshots from people also donating to the Police Accountability Fund after. So that was kind of a fun, cool way. So that's how I'm going to be doing my pettiness moving forward. The productive, trying to be more productively petty.
Productive pettiness. Becca Martinez, thanks for coming on the Almost Famous podcast. You're the
Thank
best, and we'll
so
talk
much.
To you soon.
Thank you so much.
Good luck this week.
Thank
Have fun.
You. Bye.
And just want to refer back to what Becca and I were talking about Hannah's social following. I didn't do the research on it. I read an article. So because I haven't looked at the numbers myself and done the math, I don't want to say that she 100% has lost that many followers in the periods of time that I refer to. But it is on socialblade.com if you can do the math yourself.
It's wild, Ashley. I never even knew this stuff existed. As you two were talking, I was looking on my Instagram to see what's going on in my stuff this week. It's been an enormous amount of people that have unfollowed me.
Same here. Like, I lost 8,000 followers this week. Yeah.
I don't know what that says. I don't think it says anything good. I mean, I'm not mad about it. I think I've asked people who are not going to support the lives of Black men and women across the world to unfollow, because it's not really people that I want right. following me in the first place. Yeah. But I didn't realize it was going to be this many people felt that way. I mean,
I know. I'm mind boggled. Truly mind boggled.
Mind boggled. Yep. All right, Ash. Well, let's take a break here. When we come back, we're going to interview some of Sean Lowe's past contestants and hear what they think of their season re-airing on ABC.
So you guys know that in January, we had a really cool event. It was our Almost Famous podcast live in San Francisco. So many of you came out, and it encouraged us to want to do it in far more cities across the country. But because of COVID, we won't be able to do that this year. So we're going to do something else, adapting to the times. We're going to do a live virtual podcast so we can have a live audience, but still stay safe. We're going to do it on June 22nd, and we're going to do it from 4 to 5 Pacific time. It's kind of happy hour time, so grab a glass of wine and talk Bachelor with us. Ben, tell them where they can get tickets and how much it costs and how we're going to do this deal.
Yeah, this is a big deal. We're super bummed that we weren't able to get out with you all this year. We really wanted to, as Ashley mentioned. So if you're interested in this, once again, it's June 22nd from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. Ticket price is $9.99. That's $9.99 to hang out with Ashley and I. I'll pay for a ticket just to hang out with you, Ashley. So that's the deal I'm going to make. I'm going to buy a ticket. So I'm like everybody else. If we're going to ask our fans to buy tickets, I'm going to buy a ticket as well just to be able to hear your voice and see your face live and in person. Here's the ticket link. You can go to www.cya.live/event/2172. The CYA platform is like Instagram Live meets Zoom meets Netflix party. We will be able to chat live with you. We will have a cool celebrity guest and a live question and answer, just like our live shows. It's going to be great. Hey, what else are you going to be doing? Come join us June 22nd from 4 to 5 p.m. Once again, the link is www.cya.live/event/2172. We'll see you there.
And we will be probably talking about one of the Bachelor, the greatest seasons ever. Is that what it's called? Because I just want to call it Bachelor's Greatest Hits. Can I, on this podcast going forward for the next 10 weeks, just call it Bachelor's Greatest Hits? It just rolls off my tongue better.
Yeah, you got it, Ash.
Okay, great. So we'll be talking about that there. And after this break, we are going to be talking to some of the girls from Sean Lowe's season, which we got to revisit last night. And it'll be cool to see where they are today, 7 years later.
I'm blown away that we get this opportunity to reconnect with some of the people that I grew up watching in college. Some of my absolute favorites.
I vividly remember watching this in grad school. It was one of the last seasons that I watched before being in the casting process myself. So I remember all my friends being like, would you ever sign up for this? And then being like, yeah, I definitely would. And then being inspired by this and Dez's season and being like, okay, I'm going to send it in.
Well, let's take a break, Ashley, and our dreams will come true. Talking to some of our Bachelor favorites right after this. Hey, you know what? Ashley and I talked about it at the beginning of the podcast. Right now, The Bachelor is coming out with new content. And it's, Ashley, what are you calling it?
I'm calling it The Bachelor's Greatest Hits.
Well, The Bachelor's Greatest Hits starts tonight. And as you just heard the adorable laugh of Ashley Frazier, we have her on the podcast today. Hello, Ashley.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
Pretty good. Just, you know, living life after.
So how weird was it to rewatch your season and have it aired to the public again when Bachelor Nation is bigger than ever and certainly more vocal than ever?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's an interesting time. I think it comes at a good time because it was a good time to be on Bachelor, you know, because everyone wasn't invested in social media. And so people's minds were set a little different then. And you didn't have this like, oh, well, whatever. When I get home, I'm going to be Instagram famous, you know? Uh-huh. So I think that kind of gives you, I don't know, it's just a little different way to think about it, you know? So, but a lot of people have been reaching out and wondering how I feel about a lot of things that happened on the show. Now that it's been, I don't even know how many years, you know, so it's interesting.
7 years. It's been 7 years. You're runner-up on Sean's season. Oh, you're not runner-up. You're third. You're third place on Sean's season. And now you are happily married. You have your second child on the way. But, like, is it weird to have this older love story airing now when you're married? Like, what does your husband think of all of this?
He surprised me because we don't really talk about it too much unless someone else brings it up or is watching and asks questions. But he was kind of like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, I think he realizes it's been so many years a part of our lives behind the scenes. So now for it to be on, he's actually really good support about it. I thought he was going to be kind of weirded out because I'm pretty sure I would be weirded out. But then again, it's so long ago too, so I don't know.
Is he gonna watch it?
I don't know. I need to ask him. He's at work right now, but I was wondering the same thing earlier. I'm gonna have to ask. He might.
It's
I don't think they're gonna show the entire thing, so I'm sure he'll watch. He'll tune in on some of it. He'll probably give me a hard time about some of it too.
Well, Jessica, my fiance, has zero interest in watching my season, and I don't blame
Really?
her. Like, zero interest. Well, and a part of it is like, hey, I just think it's unhealthy, a little bit weird to see a proposal to somebody else when you're
Sure.
engaged and planning on your wedding. But it is always that interesting dynamic of kind of, are you intrigued? Are you not intrigued? So back to you
I
though,
think
are
it's just
you intrigued to watch it?
I am because there's a lot of things that I don't remember. And so I kind of want to know, like, oh, how was that again? Or, you know, what really happened? Because I didn't really watch a lot of my season because at that point when it aired, I was still so emotional about everything that it was hard. And so now it seems like it's almost like it wasn't me in that space. And so now I'm like, oh, I come from a totally different way of looking at it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, what is there any particular moment in the season that you'd be not excited to watch back?
Oh yeah, there's some romantic moments, and I know that they're going to be airing some parts that are unseen footage, and so I'm interested to see what that is, you know. But what people don't realize is they had me cast as like a serious girl, like mother of the house type person, but we had a lot of fun and we giggled and laughed, and it was a lot more fun than was ever aired. And so I hope that they maybe show some of those parts too. I doubt it, but they make, you know, they may.
So yeah, Ash, as somebody who's seen the whatever it, whatever we call them, a screener, I feel like that's the only thing I'm disappointed in is that we didn't get a whole bunch of things that we've never seen before. I think this was a great opportunity to use like funny scenes of the girls bonding, or like those moments that you when you watch your season, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they didn't make that into the final cut. We didn't get a ton of that. I don't know if it'll be different for the fall for the you know following couple weeks, but that was my only complaint about it.
That would be really good. And I think the audience wants to know that too, because they ask a lot of questions that throughout all these years, they've asked questions of the behind the scenes, or what didn't we see, or what was your best part, or what was your best memory. And so it'd be nice to see other parts as well added in. I mean, they could probably do a whole new show with the season, you know, if they
Right,
wanted
yeah.
to.
And then with Catherine, she was like the most dark horse winner.
That's probably one thing that people say to me. One of the top 10 things people say is, I saw that from nowhere. That came in from nowhere.
So I thought this would have been a great opportunity for them to show their chemistry before the top four, because I think that's when it started to become cl more clear to us as an audience that she was somebody that really had Sean's attention. And I was like, oh no, they can kind of show us the depth that they had going into that, but we didn't get that either, which, you know, bummed me out. Or maybe my memory just doesn't serve me well, and these were additional scenes that we'd never seen,
No.
but there was nothing that really added to the story.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would actually like to see that too, because obviously I was invested in my season, you know. And while I do believe he absolutely made the right choice for him, I still love the love story, even if I wasn't the one, you know. So it would be nice to see.
That brings me to the, kind of our final question then. Did you, w being in the season yourself, knowing now 8 years later it's going to be played back, what about Desiree being the Bachelorette? Was that a shocker? Because I think, again, I get that question a lot of Desiree being the Bachelorette was a shocker.
Yeah, It wasn't because I knew Lindsay wasn't interested. And then when we had talked about it, at first I was, and then I kind of backed out of it because I felt, I think it was a mutual agreement, but I felt like my husband wasn't there. And I had several conversations with people, with production people, and just feeling like that wasn't my direction. As much as someone would want to do that, it's not for everybody. And what makes that decision hard is, you know, the whole final, after the final rose, when Sean had told me whatever he said about his feelings, well, all I kept replaying in my head was, gosh, what if I got caught up like that too? And then I accidentally tell somebody, or I start to have feelings for two people or three people, and I say the wrong thing and I hurt somebody, or what if I had to play along and keep somebody that I'm completely not interested in, but I have to have 17 people or I have to have 10 people. And so I just, deep down inside, I felt like I didn't know how well I could play along with that. And so that kind of made the decision what it is. But as far as Desiree, you know, people are pretty shocked because they were, you know, I think everyone tells whomever they're in front of, oh, you're my favorite. You know, when you're in public, they're like, oh, Ashley, you're the best. And then Ben, you're the best Ashley there ever was, you know? Mm-hmm. People tell you that to your face. And so I've always heard, like, I wish you would have been it. And so I don't know. I think she was good. And I'm, at the end of the day, she's married, she's happy, she's got a family. And so it was right for her.
Definitely. Yeah, they say it to your face. They say, you're the best bachelor ever. They turn around, they go, yeah, right. We have so many better. I get it.
Ashley, you're kind of saying that you feel like because you and Lindsay didn't want it, that like Des was defaulted the bachelorette?
I don't know, to be honest, because I never got backstory on it. And I've never actually thought to ask, but I know that they didn't ask Lindsay because they may have asked her, but she was already in a relationship as soon as she got home. So, and then I don't know if they talked to anybody else from my season, but I know it was between us,
very
Desiree and myself.
Okay. So, I just want to say one more thing about this episode. Okay. It was so great seeing Lindsay again because I feel like she was super forgotten. And then we got to see what she's been doing. I think that like a lot of hardcore Bachelor fans follow you on Instagram and they've been keeping up with your life and then with Dez's life and then of course Catherine and Sean's, but then she was just kind of like a ghost afterward. And even Chris Harrison was like, 7 years, we haven't talked to you. And it was really nice to see like she's kind of found her happily ever after.
Yeah, I know. I've been following her from the beginning. She's one of my favorite people. She's just so genuinely sweet and kind. And I was actually a little surprised that they wouldn't end up together, her and Sean, because I saw more of her corny, like cheesy side that Sean has than I did from Catherine. You know, now we see it from Catherine, probably, you know, because we see it from Sean a lot. But I always thought it would be Lindsay, you know, well, not from the beginning, but like towards the end. I was like, wow, they're very similar in personality.
Yeah, I can see that. All right. Yeah. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. And it was really cool to, you know,
Thanks,
get to
Ashley.
Catch up with you.
Yeah, it was good to talk to you guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye.
One of the best things about the Bachelor Greatest Hits is as Chris Harrison said, we get to see some of Bachelor Nation's favorites once again on our TV screens. And our guests today are definitely some of the favorites ever on The Bachelor. Sarah Herron is joining us right now on the Almost Famous podcast. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. Hi, how are you guys?
So good.
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to hear your voices, and it's been forever since we've talked.
Definitely.
Oh, you're so sweet. I just wanted to say that it was really cool to see like how you were the first person on the show, I think, who was very open about having a disability.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about it so eloquently. How did, if you were in somebody else's season, do you feel like you would be able to be as comfortable with it? Was Sean a big factor in you feeling okay talking about it?
It's interesting that you put it that way, because I actually feel like so much has changed in 7 years, and so much has changed around my confidence and ability to talk about being physically different and being able to talk about having a disability. So when I look back on that, I cringe because
You here talk about it, you know, like in the recapped version.
I know. Well, it's just, you know, so much growth has been had. And like I said, it's like cringeworthy to watch it, because I just feel like today I'm able to talk about myself and my differences better. But, you know, I did feel really uncomfortable, I'll admit it, at the time, because it was new for me to talk about such like personal, vulnerable content with a total stranger, let alone on TV. So it was really nerve-wracking, but I just remember Sean was fortunately really comforting and such a kind person that it made it that much easier.
Are you still in good touch with him today? Are you friends with Catherine?
I am. Like, I wouldn't say we're close, but, you know, we remain friends on Instagram. And I think the last time I saw them was at one of the Bachelor in Paradise after, like, one of those after show. Remember when they were doing that? So I think that was, like, the last time I saw them forever ago.
Yeah. I think that was season 3 of Bachelor in Paradise? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's it like leading up to watching this back, Sarah? This came out of nowhere, I think, for all of us. All of a sudden, The Bachelor says, hey, seasons are coming back on. And we're all like, we don't get a say. Okay. Yeah.
Well, fortunately for me, I mean, Ben, I think you're in a more difficult position. But I'm super nervous. Like I said, 7 years ago is it's a crazy amount of time, especially coming from being 25 years old to now being 33. It's just, I feel like I was a different person, same person, but younger. And so I'm nervous. My stomach is in knots. It's just uncomfortable.
Is Dylan, your boyfriend of 3 years, going to be watching this? And is it going to be weird for him?
Yeah, so he is going to watch with me. He's never watched any of my seasons, although in like the last year or two of dating, I've roped him into watching with me from time to time. So he's going to watch tonight. He's not stoked about it, I'll be honest. I think it's just like a little uncomfortable, and it's uncomfortable for me. I don't know. I'm like, I don't want him to see me back then, but it'll be fun. It's all part of the experience.
I want to go back to your disability for a second. Is it hurtful to see that they haven't had anybody else with a disability in the season since yours?
I think the word I would use is surprising.
Okay.
Not hurtful necessarily, but I guess I'm just surprised because so many people are living with physical differences in the whole range of, like, there's a whole spectrum, right? You can have invisible disabilities, you can have visible disabilities. And so I'm a little surprised that there hasn't been more representation. Hopefully that'll change.
And I was just going to say that it feels very weird for me to call what you have a disability. And then I was reminded when you just said that you like to call it a physical difference, which I much prefer.
Yeah, I don't know. I just never, everyone has their own way of their preference for how they want to call their physical difference. And for me, just, you know, growing up, my mom and my dad never taught me to really say that I had a disability. So for me, my lane was physical difference, but everyone has a different way that they prefer to be called.
I want to talk a little bit more about this episode and what what I've seen as I've seen the screener. I know you're pretty open about the fact that we were recording this on Monday afternoon. It's a couple hours away from Sarah being able to see it live. She didn't get a screener, but you'll be able to answer these from memory anyway. We are really reminded in this episode that Tierra is a little wacky. Maybe the most extra person we've ever seen. Definitely craving attention, always getting quotes. I don't know. Maybe she truly was hurt in those instances. But what was Tierra like behind the scenes? Is it what you see is what you get?
I'm so interested in this question. This is like this is my biggest takeaway from the whole episode. Is like, is this real?
Oh my God. Okay, wait, are you guys going to have her on this show?
No. So actually, since you didn't see this, Chris Harrison tells us on the 3-hour episode that they had asked for her to come on and she refused to come on. So yeah, she really doesn't want to be any part of Bachelor Nation anymore.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I'm not surprised to hear that, but because she's always been that way. It was like, as soon as the show wrapped, she went silent on social media. It was really, I think, really traumatizing for her to see it all play back. But with that said, Tierra in the house, you know, I remember, like most cases with the quote unquote villain, sometimes like they're not as bad as the edit. And I had a harder time seeing it at first because I was Tierra's roommate. So we shared a bunk. And then when we started traveling, for some reason, like Tierra always got her own room. And I don't know if it was a request she was making or what, but she would always be put in her own room with me. And so, like, I remember when we got to Canada, all of the ladies were in one big bedroom that was like Madeline style with bunk beds just lined up. But then Tierra got to be in her own like presidential suite.
There's mention that she had like a cot, like she was always sleeping on a cot. Maybe that was separately.
Yeah, maybe, but just separate. And so I started to see that draw a wedge for sure. And I felt in an uncomfortable position because I was like, well, I don't really understand. I'm always staying with Tierra. I think I was a little bit of a safe place for her. But then I knew the rest of the women in the house really didn't like her. So it was really tough to be kind of in the middle. But I will say it was just constant drama. There was always something that like Tierra needed attention for. And, you know, it was just a weird situation. I had never been put into that. You know, I have a half sister, but I never grew up with sisters. I had never lived in a house full of girls, and to just see, you know, so much drama coming from one person was intense.
So that with Tierra then, I'm just really intrigued because we have these villains, and I just hate that. I hate the word villain. Yeah. We have these characters that come on the show who are highlighted. I really feel like leaning into that, and if that's not you, then you lean into it and show the public that that's not you. I feel like typically it works out all right, especially if you're just a character that's highlighted because you're extra. I mean, I think that actually kind of benefits you in the end.
So you mean if you're just kind of, if you lean into being unapologetically yourself,
or if you apologize, but running from the public makes us all go, hey, we miss you, or we'd want to know more about you, or we want to see you.
Well, it's just interesting because she's not really giving herself a chance for a redemption, you know, by staying silent. It's like, she's kind of just allowing the narrative to continue. And so I feel like if she took the opportunity to come forward, especially 7 years later, she could fill everyone in.
That's what I'm saying.
Nobody's mad at her anymore.
Now it's like, no, now we think it's funny and we would love to see where her life is now.
Totally. I would love to know what's going on.
Maybe she doesn't want us to see where her life is.
I don't know. But yeah, nobody's mad anymore. Now we're just having fun with this. This is what this whole show's about.
Yeah.
Another point of your season that you weren't there for, but I remember so vividly, and it was fun to rewatch. Well, actually, it was sad to rewatch. was Desiree's brother, and his reaction towards Sean calling the, you know, the born again virgin bachelor playboy so silly. Do you have any idea how that affected Desiree from continuing on past the top four? You think that Sean would have kept her around had it not been the brother? And do you know from, you know, Dez's mouth how, like, the brother and her relationship was after the fact?
Gosh, I actually totally forgot about that. And I don't feel like I really know about the dynamic. I just know it was, you know, I'm sure really, really hurtful for her, and probably felt like that totally jeopardized her experience. But mm-hmm. how she would answer today, probably that it all worked out the way it was supposed to. So
right.
I don't know exactly how that all played a part.
Yeah, in a way it's kind of fateful.
Yeah. Yeah.
The okay, Sarah, to end it up here, I know you have a big night ahead of you. With a lot of hanging out, watching some very anxious moments.
Yeah.
Looking back on your time now, 7 years later, are you thankful you've done it?
100%. I tell people this all the time, you know, because I think a lot of people want to say, like, oh, was it worth it? Was it everything that you see on TV? Would you do it over again? And I always say it 100% changed my life for the better. And it just opened a world of self-growth and opportunity for me. And it was a dream. It truly was a fairy tale. Like, Ashley, I think you can relate to this. I grew up watching the show. I loved it. And going on was just a dream come true. And the way that it's all played out in my life, I'm forever grateful for.
Well,
speaking about relatability, I have to throw one thing in there that I thought of watching this episode. Oh, and that when I was younger, I wasn't as outspoken as I am today, but I was relating so much to Catherine of, like, her thinking, I can't believe that I got this guy. I can't believe, like, I'm getting my dream man. Her nerves were written all over her face in moments. And then she was just like, you're so hot. You're so hot. Like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I'm obsessed with you. And I was like, that is me. Like, that I was exactly like her with Jared. And it was just fun and relatable to see a girl just like kind of geek out over the guy she was with.
You're right.
Is that how she was when like the entire process?
100%. She was always just kind of like, I think, in disbelief of where she was and the connection she was having with Sean. And I think she always used to call him like a beefcake or
beef. Yeah. Beef she goes, cake. I'm a vegan, but I just want you to know that I like the beef.
Yeah. So she was like, I can't believe this is happening to me. So you're right. That is a totally relatable, very human experience that she got to have.
We should ask her today after a couple kids and a few years of marriage if she still calls him a beefcake and if she's still so obsessed with him or not.
That's exactly what my mom said.
We should definitely
watching it.
We should definitely watch. Hey, well, Sarah Herron, we're really glad that The Bachelor had you on, that you said yes to it, and that you came on this podcast, everybody. Once again, this has been Sarah Herron, and hey, good luck watching Ashley and I've seen it, but good luck watching this episode.
Oh gosh, thank you. Thanks.
See you, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
She's always a bright light. Always somebody that we enjoy interviewing. And you know what? It in a weird way, Ashley, these episodes, they feel like a reunion of sorts for us to have these people back on who, you know, 3 years ago when we started this podcast, they were like very much still in the scene. They're very much talked about. And now it's like, hey, come back on and let's chat again. It's kind of nice.
Yes. Ben, it's kind of like watching your favorite chick flick over and over again and like revisiting these love stories. So if I'm like thinking, is this show going to be a hit? Yeah, because it's like watching your favorite rom-com characters all over again. And we all know that we do that whenever we're scrolling through the TV and we see 21 Dresses, My Best Friend's Wedding, and The Wedding Planner.
Yeah, all the good stuff that we love to watch and enjoy. Well, hey, once again, everybody out there listening, if you are hanging out, which you definitely are, you have the time, come join us. Since we can't come to a city near you, we have a live virtual podcast on June 22nd from 4 to 5 p.m. Ashley and I are buying tickets to this as well, so we can be there. It's $9.99. You can go to www.cya.live/event/2172 to get your tickets. Also, don't forget that The Bachelor, we're just going to coin our term, The Bachelor Greatest Hits are now airing every Monday night on ABC, starting with Sean Lowe's season. Ashley, you the bomb. You the best. Let's talk soon, okay?
You too. All right, see you next week. Bye, guys. Thank you so much. And for now, this has been Ashley. Oh, my God. I messed up our ending. And for now, I've been Ashley.
And I've been Ben. We'll talk to you later, guys.
Bye.
Follow the Ben and Ashley I, Almost Famous podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.